Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to Teck Resources Q3 2017 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. This conference call is being recorded on Thursday, October 26, 2017. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Fraser Phillips, Senior Vice President, Investor Relations and Strategic Analysis. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Elena. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us for Teck's third quarter 2017 results conference call. Before we begin, I'd like to draw your attention to the forward-looking information on slide two. This presentation contains forward-looking statements regarding our business. However, various risks and uncertainties may cause actual results to vary. Teck does not assume the obligation to update any forward-looking statement. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Don Lindsay, our President and CEO.
Thanks very much, Fraser, and good morning, everyone. I will begin on slide three with some highlights from our third quarter results, and then new this time, we have Glenn Birchnell, our Director of Energy Marketing and Logistics, who will provide an update on Fort Hills, and in particular, on our sales and logistics strategy for blended bitumen. He will be followed by Ron Millos, our CFO, who will provide additional color on our financial results, and then we will conclude, as always, with a Q&A session, where Ron, Glenn, and I, and several additional members of our senior management team would be happy to answer any questions. We are very pleased with our performance in the third quarter. We achieved strong operating results, which together with favorable commodity prices, translated into strong financial performance. And while there were a number of one-time items, which total about 17 cents a share, when you aggregate the reported $1.08 with that 17 cents, it certainly looks very strong to us. We reported our second highest quarterly sales for steelmaking coal, reflecting strong customer demand with record steel production in China in the third quarter, and importantly, strong demand in the rest of the world. We also reported record zinc production at Antamina for the second consecutive quarter. So with these strong operating results and improving prices, our gross profit before depreciation and amortization was almost $700 million higher in Q3 than in the same period last year, and we continue to generate significant free cash flow. At the same time, we are preparing for first oil at Fort Hills. Construction is now more than 96% complete, and froth production was initiated in September, which will allow for commissioning to be accelerated. When Fort Hills is running at full capacity, our cash flows related to the project will shift from significant capital going out the door to cash inflows. Also in the quarter, we received approval to make a normal course issuer bid to purchase up to 20 million of our Class B shares over the next 12 months. And we are also very pleased to be named to the 2017 Dow Jones Sustainability World Index for the eighth consecutive year, which indicates that our sustainability practices are in the top 10% of the 2,500 largest companies in the world. Turning to our third quarter financial results on slide four, our strong operating performance has enabled us to capitalize on favorable commodity prices in the quarter. Revenue was up compared with the same quarter last year, primarily due to significantly higher steelmaking coal prices and helped by higher zinc and copper prices as well. Bottom line adjusted profit attributable to shareholders was $620 million and adjusted EBITDA was $1.4 billion in the quarter. Importantly, over the past 12 months to September 30th, we generated a record $6.1 billion in adjusted EBITDA. And note that that was based on an average realized price of U.S. $185 per ton of steelmaking coal and a copper price of $2.62 per pound and a zinc price of $1.23. Now, to put that in context, our previous record of $5.9 billion, which was set in 2011, when our average realized price for steelmaking coal was $257 versus that $185 in the last 12 months, so a $72 per ton difference. And the average copper price back in 2011 was $4 per pound. That's $1.38 per pound higher than what we just averaged in the past 12 months of $2.62, so quite a difference. Now, it is true that the zinc price back then was 99 cents per pound or 24 cents per pound lower, and of course, the Canadian dollar was stronger, so we've had a benefit of a weaker dollar this past 12 months. But still, it's a very significant achievement, which is the result of our ongoing focus on managing costs and optimizing production from our core assets. So once again, higher EBITDA, with a coal price that was $72 a ton lower and a copper price that was $1.38 per pound lower. I'd also like to point out that the realized steelmaking coal price for the past 10 years has averaged $164 per ton, and on an inflation-adjusted basis, that's $183 U.S. per ton, which is very close to the $185 average that we just received in the 12 months ended September 30th. So that $185 is not really that high a price relative to the average of the last 10 years. Turning to slide 5, as I mentioned earlier, our adjusted profit attributed to shareholders was $621 million, or $1.08 per share. While we are pleased with our strong financial performance, our earnings and EBITDA were below consensus expectations for the quarter. There were a number of items and events that may have contributed to the shortfall, including high share-based compensation expense because our shares share price increased during the quarter, environmental and care and maintenance costs due to regulatory changes, a higher effective tax rate, copper sales below production due to timing of shipments, so that they'll show up in the next quarter, and lower gross profit trail operations due to lower silver production following some operating disruptions at some of our concentrate suppliers, and, of course, lower zinc treatment charges. I'll now run through highlights by business unit, starting with our base metals businesses, and in particular copper, on slide 6. Production at Highland Valley is improving gradually through the year, as we expected. We continue to expect full-year copper production to total, for the division, 275 to 290,000 tons. Cash costs, net of byproduct margins, were down from Q3 last year, driven by strong cash margins for byproducts and helped by strong zinc prices and zinc sales at Antamina and strong moly sales at Highland Valley. Looking forward, we now expect full-year cash costs, net of byproduct margins, to be in the range of U.S. $1.30 to $1.40 per pound, which is down from the previous guidance of U.S. $1.40 to $1.50 per pound. At Highland Valley, a new five-year collective agreement was ratified by union employees, resulting in a $13 million one-time labor settlement charge. In addition, the board sanctioned our D3 project to install an additional ball mill at Highland Valley, which is expected to increase mill throughput by 5% and copper recoveries by over 2%. And that is expected to be completed by mid-2019 at a cost of $72 million. Overall, gross profit before depreciation and amortization was up 60% from Q3 in 2016 to $281 million. Our zinc business unit results are summarized on slide 7. As a reminder, Antamina zinc-related financial results are reported in our copper business unit. At Red Dog, zinc sales were higher than our guidance for the quarter and are indicative of the tightness in the zinc concentrate market. The concentrate shipping season was extended by 2 weeks and is expected to be completed in the first week of November, having shipped the maximum possible of around 1 million tons of zinc concentrate and 210,000 tons of lead concentrate. We now expect Red Dog sales of contained zinc to be around 180,000 tons in Q4, reflecting stronger demand from customers and, of course, our normal seasonal pattern. In addition, the board sanctioned our VIP2 project to upgrade the mill at Red Dog, which is expected to increase average mill throughput by around 15% over the remaining mine life to 2031. It is expected to be completed by Q4 2019 at a cost of $110 million U.S. And finally, please note that NANA's royalty rate increased to 35% effective October 1st by a 5% increase as expected. A new five-year collective agreement was ratified by union employees at Trail Operations, resulting in a $26 million one-time labor settlement charge. And we now have long-term labor agreements in place at all of our North American operations. And again, like we saw at Highland Valley in the settlement with the collective agreement there, Trail had this one-time settlement charge, and those are charges that analysts would not have been able to have had in their models because they weren't disclosed until our release last night. For the full year, we now expect our total zinc and concentrate production, including co-product production, to be 645 to 665,000 tons, and overall gross profit before depreciation and amortization was up 8% from Q3 in 2016. Turning to steelmaking coal on slide 8, as I mentioned earlier, we reported our second highest quarterly sales for steelmaking coal ever at 7.54 million tons, reflecting strong customer demand. We expect Q4 sales to be approximately 6.5 million tons. Our average realized price was US $159 per ton, in line with the historical average of 94% of the quarterly contract price and in line with the updated guidance we gave earlier. The relationship between our realized price and the quarterly contract price depends, of course, on our product mix and the timing of sales. In that regard, in the fourth quarter, we expect a one-time shift in our product mix to a higher proportion of non-premium steelmaking coal products. This is one time only. We currently have low raw coal inventory levels due to restricted material movement in the first half of the year and due to mining in newly permitted areas. And this change in product mix is expected to reduce our average realized price to approximately 85% of the quarterly contract price in Q4. We expect to recover our raw coal inventories and move back towards a more traditional product mix as we enter 2018. It is worth noting that Q4 2017 is shaping up to be another very strong period for pricing. I note that the current rolling average for the Q4 quarterly index is just under US $194 per ton, and the spot price is just under $179 per ton, with only 5 weeks left in the quarterly pricing period. So if you do the math on that, it looks like we're going to have a very strong quarterly benchmark price. We achieved record material movement in Q3 at 79 million bank cubic meters. As a result, we are well positioned to recover the material movement shortfall from the first half of the year and to restore that operational flexibility. For the full year, we now expect production at the low end of our guidance range of 27 to 27.5 million tons and site costs near to the high end of our guidance range of $49 to $53 per ton. Overall, gross profit before depreciation and amortization was up more than $500 million over last year's third quarter. We have provided an update on the Elk Valley Water Quality Plan on slide 9. At our Westline Creek Active Water Treatment Facility, we have successfully tested an additional treatment step to address the issue that we had previously reported with selenium compounds in the effluent. We are now proceeding with plant modifications with construction to be completed in Q3 2018 at a cost of around $15 million Canadian. The construction of our second plant at Fording River was pushed out to incorporate these design changes and will commence in 2018. Our spending plans on water treatment were delayed as a result, and you may recall that in 2014, our capital cost estimate for water quality management was $600 million over a five-year period from 2014 to 2018. We now expect that during that same period, our spending will be only around $300 million, so $300 million less than the original $600 million that we had guided to while we were working through the technological challenges. For the next five-year period, starting in 2018, so from 2018 to 2022, we expect to spend between $850 and $900 million. Beyond that, we expect long-term water treatment costs to be around $6 per ton, versus the $4 per ton we had guided to previously. And that will include capital and operating costs and assuming annual production of 27.5 million tons. Just to emphasize, that includes both capital and operating costs. Of course, actual costs may vary depending on the results of ongoing environmental monitoring, and we continue to research and develop alternatives that have potential to reduce significantly our costs, some of which are very encouraging. And so with that, I will turn it over to Glenn with an update on Fort Hills and our sales and logistics strategy for blended bitumen. Glenn.
Thanks, Tom. Slide 10 provides an update on the Fort Hill project. As Don mentioned earlier, we are preparing for first oil, which is now expected prior to year end. Construction is now more than 96% complete, and 98% of Fort Hill's operations staff have been hired. Five of the six major project areas have been turned over to operations, and the focus remains on the construction of the secondary extraction area, which is now 95% complete. Importantly, first froth production commenced in September. The significance of this is that it allows for accelerated commissioning of the project. Froth is an intermediate product, and its production utilizes all the major components of the project prior to secondary extraction. The froth produced is currently being trucked to Suncor's base plant for further processing until construction of the secondary extraction area is completed. By the time secondary extraction construction is complete, early froth production should have resulted in the front end of the plant being fully commissioned, allowing the focus to shift to the startup of secondary extraction. We have developed a comprehensive sales and logistics strategy for our blended bitumen product. The extent of our commercial activities when Fort Hills is at full production capacity are summarized on slide 11. Our share of bitumen production is expected to average 36,000 barrels per day, and we will purchase around 11,000 barrels per day of diluent for blending. We do not anticipate any issues with availability of diluent in the market in Western Canada. Total bitumen blend sales are expected to average 47,000 barrels per day. Fort Hills will produce a high-quality, lower carbon intensity product under the name Fort Hills Reduced Carbon Dilbit Blend, as outlined on slide 12. Fort Hills utilizes paraffinic froth treatment, or PFT, which is a solvent-based extraction process to remove fines and asphaltenes. As a result, it will be among the lowest life cycle carbon intensity of any Canadian oil sands production, with a lower carbon intensity than about half of the oil currently refined in the U.S. Overall, Fort Hills Reduced Carbon Dilbit Blend is a superior refinery feedstock. It also has lower diluent requirements for pipelines. The Albion Mining Project, operated by Canadian Natural Resources, and the Curl Mining Project, operated by Imperial Oil, also use PFT, so they are the best benchmarks for the product that will be produced at Fort Hills. The regional distribution network in Alberta is shown on slide 13. All components are now ready to receive product from Fort Hills. From the mine gate, bitumen will be transported via the Northern Courier hot bitumen pipeline to the East Tank Farm, where it will be blended with condensate that arrives on the Norlite pipeline. Diluted bitumen will be transported on the Wood Buffalo pipeline to Hardisty Terminal, where Teck has dedicated storage available for approximately 425,000 barrels. Diluent originates at the Edmonton Terminal, and Teck has dedicated storage available for 100,000 barrels of diluent at Fort Saskatchewan in Alberta. Our sales and logistics strategy for blended bitumen is summarized on slide 14. Overall, it is based on diverse market access and risk mitigation. For our 47,000 barrels of blended bitumen per day, we have contracted for 10,000 barrels per day of capacity on the existing Keystone Pipeline to the U.S. Gulf Coast, where there is significant refining capacity for heavy oil available. We have also contracted for 12,000 barrels per day of capacity on the proposed Trans Mountain Pipeline to the west coast of Canada, which would provide access to the Pacific Rim. We plan to sell the remaining 25,000 barrels per day at Hardisty, where customers may have their own contracted pipeline capacity and common carrier pipelines are available. We have long-term contracts in place for up to 20,000 barrels per day to be sold at Hardisty. The remaining 27,000 barrels per day are expected to be sold on a monthly basis, either to the U.S. Gulf Coast, to the Pacific Rim, or at Hardisty. If the proposed Trans Mountain Pipeline is not built or is delayed, we have additional options available, including increasing our capacity on Keystone and selling additional product at Hardisty. In addition, rail will be available as required. We're looking forward to first oil at Fort Hills, and we have a comprehensive plan in place for sales and logistics of our share of product. And with that, I will turn it over to Ron for additional color on the quarter from a financial perspective.
Thank you, Glenn. I'm moving on to slide 15, which looks at two components of our other operating income and expense. So as Don mentioned earlier, our third quarter pricing adjustments are summarized on the left side. Overall, we had a $93 million in positive adjustments this quarter compared with $25 million in positive adjustments in Q3 of 2016. There was a US 27 cent increase in the copper price and US 20 cent increase in the zinc price compared with US 1 cent and US 13 cent increases respectively in the same period last year. Now these adjustments are included in our income statement under other operating income and expense. And the chart on the left represents a simplified relationship between the change in the copper and zinc prices and the reported settlement pricing adjustment. And it continues to provide a good estimate each quarter. And our third quarter share-based compensation expense is summarized on the right side. Overall, we had an expense of $52 million in Q3 compared with a $15 million positive contribution in Q2 of 2017. The chart on the right represents a simplified relationship between the change in our stock price and the reported share-based compensation expense. And Q3 was a bit of an outlier on a simplified model due to the particularly strong performance of our shares in the period. Moving on to slide 16, I've summarized the changes in cash during Q3. Our cash flow from operations was $901 million in the quarter. We spent $390 million on capital projects, including Fort Hills. Capitalized stripping costs were $175 million, and we paid $137 million in interest and finance charges and $78 million on financial investments and other assets. We repaid a total of $28 million in debt in Canadian dollar terms. In addition, we paid $29 million in dividends, representing our new 5 cent per share quarterly base dividend. After these and other minor items, we ended the quarter with cash and short-term investments of around $889 million, and our current cash balance is about $1 billion Canadian right now. Turning to slide 17, our financial position remains strong. We currently have approximately $4.9 billion in liquidity, and that includes $1 billion in cash and our undrawn U.S. $3 billion committed credit facility. That meaningful progress that we've made in reducing our debt and our strong free cash flow have been noted by the rating agencies in upgrades, most recently by S&P a week or two back, who now rate us BB+ with a stable outlook. Our net debt to EBITDA ratio for the 12-month period to September 30th is 0.9 times, and it will likely move down further with the closing of the Waneta transaction, which we expect around the end of the first quarter of next year. And with that, I will turn it back to Don for some closing comments.
Thanks, Ron. In summary, on slide 18, operational performance, strong markets for our key products, and the approaching completion of Fort Hills have resulted in a successful quarter for the company, and it positions us well for ongoing profitability. Looking forward, we are generating strong free cash flow at current spot prices. We are preparing for first oil at Fort Hills by year-end with a comprehensive sales and logistics plan in place for our share of production, and our financial position remains strong for the future. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions. Please note that some of our management team members are calling in from different locations, as you would expect, so there may be a brief pause after you ask your question as we sort out where to direct it. Okay, over to you, operator.
Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. Please limit your inquiry to one question plus a follow-up question. After that, if you have further questions, please rejoin the queue. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while the participants register. Thank you for your patience. The first question is from Chris Terry with Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, Don and team. My question is really around the coal division. Just trying to get more comfort, I guess, as we head into 18, around both the realized price and also the geotechnical issues and the transition out of Coal Mountain and how we think about that. I guess on the realized price, should we expect that it jumps straight away back into the historical normal range, well above 90% by 1Q next quarter, or is it a ramp up as the product mix changes? And how do we think about 2018 coal production maybe on a quarterly basis in the first couple of quarters of next year? Is it a is it still going to be hampered a little bit by some of the moves and the geotechnical issues? Thanks.
Okay, good question. Thank you, Terry. And I'm going to start with Rhea Foley, who's on the line on the first part of your question, and then back to Robin Sharmet on the second part. Rhea, over to you.
All right. Thanks, Don. So, Chris, when we look at our products, usually in our annual information form, we've said that for 2015 and 2016, less than 25% of our sales were non-premium hard coking coal. So for Q4 2017, that is an outlier, and the non-premium hard coking coal will be around 30% of our sales or so, which is what is leading our price, our realized price relative to the premium steelmaking coal assessment, about 85%, as we said in the release. Our expectation is that we will recover our coal inventories as indicated through Q4, and those inventories have already started to improve in Q3, and we will transition to our traditional product mix as we get into 2018.
Okay, so we should expect return to high realized pricing and, no continued impact, I guess, from some of the current issues you've had from the actual operation side.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Over to Robin on the part two.
Yeah, and I can maybe add a little bit more to the look going into 2018. Just gone through all of the mine plans actually over the last couple of weeks as we prepare our budgets for next year. As Don mentioned, we set a pretty strong performance level through Q3 on total material and expect that to continue through the rest of the year and into next year. So, as Rael said, we are building raw coal inventories at sites again, and we'll be back up to levels that are quite typical through into 2018. Maybe a little bit on the geotechnical issues. There are two localized issues at two of our smaller operations. They have impacted in the short term anyway some access to coal. We are out of one of the operations, we are starting to get some coal out now. The other one is still challenged. But overall, with the strong performance across the other operations, we're able to make up that shortfall in raw coal. So at least by year end. We're still working through, obviously, the ramp up as we recovered from the first half. So pretty confident in 2018 for sure.
Okay, thanks guys. And just one other quick question, maybe for Don. In terms of QB2 and you thinking about making a commitment, I guess, around the middle of next year, can you provide any more timing on when you might look at a strategic partner or the minority stakes? Is it definitely pre that, or do you make the decision to commit to the project and then look at the second partner? I'm just trying to get a bit more color on how we should think about the timing of that.
Yeah, so we're really focused on getting the permit, and as you know, there's an election in Chile coming, and so there's a bit of uncertainty there. We think it's going to come early next year, but until we really have the permit, a lot of those kind of decisions that you're referencing wouldn't really be pursued at the board level until we really know what we've got. So that's good. It's the kind of question that actually I don't think we could answer for several months. At the moment, and when we do take a look at it, it would be in the context of what our balance sheet looks like then. And, of course, we would expect that Juanita would have closed sometime, hopefully by the end of Q1, which is $1.2 billion of cash. And, at these commodity prices, we are generating pretty good cash. And so we would look at what our balance sheet looks like at that stage as well. So between now and when we hope to sanction the project, which would be around April of 2018, our financial position could be really quite strong, and so that would be a factor that the board would look at in determining whether a partner was needed or not. So, the short answer is I can't quite answer your question right yet, but that's at least how we think about it.
Okay, great. Thanks, Don.
Thank you. The next question is from Orest Wowkodaw with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, just going back to the coal again. Obviously, I was surprised by the guidance for Q4, specifically around the mix. And I just want to be absolutely clear in terms of, are you expecting realizations to go back to the normal level starting Q1? And what gives you confidence as you transition out of Coal Mountain that you can maintain the mix at the same 27 to 27.5 million tons in the next couple of years?
Okay, same two people to answer that question, two parts. This time we'll start with Robin on the production levels post-Coal Mountain.
Okay. Yeah, so post-Coal Mountain, we've got a number of things being done at the other four operations within the valley that are going to make up that tonnage. So across all four operations, there's additional production capacity with small amounts of capital in some cases. And some of the work we've been doing over the last few quarters anyway to get stripping up is in preparation for that, so that we've got coal available at those other operations. So that plan's been developed over the last couple of years to be able to transition from Coal Mountain into a sustained production level post-closure of that operation. And the product mix then coming out of that is going to be more around the product you'd expect from those other four operations, which are typically the premium hard coking coals on balance. So that's a little bit of a long-term on coal.
That last point was really important. Okay, with that, over to Réal on the first part of the question.
All right. Thanks, Don. So as a result of our other operations picking up production, as Robin just described, we will see our price realizations return to historical levels starting in 2018.
Which, of your mines, which two are the ones having the geotech issues? And then in terms of the quality mix, where does the lower quality coal mostly come from? Which mine?
Yeah, well, Coal Mountain is a semi-soft, primarily semi-soft with small amounts of thermal. So that's on the balance of products. That's the bulk of the lower quality products. Every operation has a range of products, but in the other four in the valley, they're more towards the hard coking coal end.
Oh, so actually, Coal Mountain closing actually reduces your amount of lower quality coal then?
On balance, it does, yeah, right. Because it's replaced by higher quality coking coal from the other four operations that represents the balance of their reserve.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Lucas Pipes with FBR Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. So I hate to stay on the coal side, but I wanted to maybe ask a bigger picture question on the cost front. So obviously costs were in the 50s year over year. That compares to, I think, 43. And you mentioned a couple of drivers that contributed to the higher costs on a year over year basis. And I just wondered, Are some of those going to reverse again, if you think about employee turnover, for example, or stripping ratios as we look into 2018? Where could costs go? Thank you.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I think certainly represented the increase in costs through the last half of the year has been the use of contract mining to catch up. So in order to get ourselves back on track in terms of a balanced strip ratio going into 2018, we've had to make up for quite a shortfall through the first half. And so that was done by additional capacity, which obviously is going to come at a higher unit cost, but it's temporary. So once we've brought ourselves back to a level of strip ratio that can support the plan in 2018, those costs come out of the plan. So contract mining will end to the extent that we're using it now. And we'll be able to sustain the cost forward with the same structure we did in the past.
So could cost be lower year over year in 18 versus 17?
No, I'm going to say they're pretty much about, because there's a couple things going on as well. If you remember, strip ratio has come up to around 10 to 1, so slightly higher than you would have seen earlier in 2016. So So that's part of the stripping being replaced at the other operations from Coal Mountain. So Coal Mountain's quite a low strip ratio operation. The other ones are in around 10 to 1. So that also contributes to the cost structure forward, but that's the one we've been forecasting now for some time.
Okay. Thank you.
Just, on costs and production, the detailed guidance for 2018 will come out when we issue our fourth quarter results in mid-February as well. So stay tuned for that information.
Great. And then on the water treatment side, the long-term cost estimate in between capital and operating costs was increased from $4 to $6. What drove that increase, and could you maybe expand a little on the things you're working on that could maybe lower the cost, maybe back down to the $4 level? Thank you.
Okay, well, there's a fair bit going on with that question. So there's two main things that have changed, I guess, in terms of the forward view. So one was the work that was done after 2014, where we upgraded many of the processes within the West Lion Creek plant. And the second piece was the identification of an issue with selenium compounds and the development of a strategy to resolve that, which is it's AOP, it's advanced oxidation process. So that's a bolt-on process onto the current design of the West Lion Creek plant that will solve that problem. So there were two sort of cycles, I guess, of enhancements made to this to the treatment strategy that led to a higher cost. The other part of that, puzzle is that we had to delay the start of the second water treatment plant at Fording River until we resolve some of those issues. We're still on pace for the other treatment plants in the schedule, but with the delay of Fording River, that's now compressed into the next five-year period. So that's why you see a jump in capital for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then long-term, that increase from 4 to 6, really does reflect the additional costs that around the design of the plants forward. Now, there's certainly some things that we're excited about. We're currently in the process of a pilot on saturated fills, which has a potential to be a really strong strategy as far as treatment of water. So if that goes well through next year, that'll be an exciting development, I guess, in terms of that strategy. So there's some things like that we're working on as well. But right now, the plan forward is water treatment plants. It's a proven technology we can make work, and that's the solution that we know will solve the problem.
That's helpful. And so should we layer in the $850 to $900 million in capital costs kind of on a gradual basis into the model through the period 2022, and then in addition to that, what should we be thinking of in terms of coal sustaining capital?